It's 4:06, and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, our guest has spent the last year tracking media reports of gun violence. We'll hear why and what he found out.
First, though, the enduring effects of the two wars in Iraq and Afghanistan on the Americans who fought them may be worse and farther reaching than we first thought.
That's according to a new report out from the Washington Post and the Kaiser Family Foundation. Here's a quote. More than half of the 2.6 million Americans dispatched to fight the war struggle with physical or mental health problems stemming from their service, feel disconnected from civilian life, and believe the government is failing to meet their needs.
This report is part of a three-part series on the impact of the war on its veterans. The first two installments were released last week, and the final installment will be out later this month.
Joining us now is Rajiv Chandrasekaran, who wrote about the results. He's senior correspondent, associate editor, and former Baghdad bureau chief for The Washington Post. Rajiv, thanks for being with us.
Good afternoon. Good to be on.
How many veterans were involved in this study?
Well, we polled about 850 veterans. That gives us a statistically significant sample set. And that was a sample that was there are things we know about our 2.6 million veterans and those who have served out in these wars. You know, we know roughly the gender breakdown, the racial breakdown, where they're from. And so our pool very much mirrored the overall national population, so we feel it's a pretty representative sample.
And one of the most striking and disturbing results you found: one in two vets knows a veteran who has attempted suicide. Have mental health challenges become just part of the culture of military of veterans?
Well, these wars have extracted a tremendous mental and emotional toll on our forces. We found that 31% of veterans say that their mental or emotional health is worse today than before they deployed. About 4 in 10 say they experience outbursts of anger, and about a similar percentage say that they have relationship problems. They're two of the 20 indicators for post-traumatic stress. And, of course, the suicide figure that you cited. They've taken a real beating here in these wars. Now, I don't mean to suggest that all of our veterans are damaged beyond repair or are ticking time bombs. Far from it. We know that two-thirds of them don't have any lasting mental health consequences. And for those who have reported problems, many of them are seeking treatment, and many of them are getting better. There is a positive story here in the path to recovery. But what it does show is that there is an enormous burden being placed, a cost, on our Defense Department and on our Department of Veterans Affairs to care for these folks we've sent into harm's way, both physically and mentally, for many of them for some years to come.
And speaking of physically, you found a lot of physical health problems, not necessarily from being wounded or injured in combat, but just things related to being deployed in a dangerous area. What are some examples of the physical problems?
So, in some cases, it's the very stuff that was designed to save our troops. Body armor, which have ceramic plates in the front and the back to stop automatic weapons fire. Kevlar helmets to protect their heads. Well, all that stuff is all well and good, and it saved many, many lives, but it has come at a cost for some. After multiple tours with folks wearing the stuff day in, day out for a year, they're reporting back problems, hip problems, knee problems. We're finding people with abnormally high hormone levels that are just completely out of whack. Others are showing respiratory problems because of smoke and dust they've been breathing in there. So when we think of those who've been wounded by their time at war, typically people think, oh, they must have been shot. They must have been injured in an explosion.
Yeah.
But it's more than that.
The occupational hazards that a civilian maybe wouldn't even think of.
Certainly not.
And then those two things combined with other factors make it difficult for veterans to find employment, you found, as part of this series. What are the challenges there?
Well, what we found was a sort of a varied story for officers, for those who have college degrees, who've had real leadership skills in the military. They haven't had too much trouble, and they're pretty optimistic about taking their military service and plowing it in to a good job in the civilian world. But there's a lot more nervousness, a lot more frustration from troops who served in an enlisted capacity, those who don't have a college degree, they're very worried about transitioning into the private sector and worried whether their military service will help them or hurt them. They're worried about how they're going to move forward in an economy that's still struggling to add jobs.
Well, and you mentioned some of those physical injuries. People with bad backs are having trouble getting jobs in any occupation that requires lifting, manual labor. Just that occupational hazard from the military is making it harder to get jobs.
You know, that's a very good point. And indeed, that's something we found. Some of these physical and mental costs of the war make it much tougher to slot oneself into manufacturing jobs or other sorts of employment that might be physically demanding or might involve being around loud machinery or jobs in the retail space that involve having to be around lots of strangers on any given day, which might be hard for some people still going through issues of post-traumatic stress.
There's a nationwide effort, Chamber of Commerce and others, pledging to actively seek to hire veterans. How is that going?
Well, there are a lot of jobs that are pledged out there. The question is matching them up to veterans who have the right skills. And so there's a skills gap. There's also sort of a knowledge gap. Getting people in front of the right employers, there's a lot of positive talk from corporate America, but there's still some real questions with follow-through. And then even when veterans get hired, there's some big questions to be addressed about retention. What's being done to help ensure that the veteran who does get a job keeps that job, and some of the unique challenges that some of them may face in their readjustment get addressed by employers instead of simply brushed off.
And speaking of help with the transition or just getting help in general with the needs of veterans, what did you find when you asked veterans about the availability of mental health treatment, physical medical treatment as veterans?
Well, so there's still a lot of frustration there among the veteran population about the services that are being provided by the Defense Department and the Department of Veterans Affairs. Well, we found almost 60% saying that they believe that the government is doing a poor or only fair job of meeting the needs of this generation of veterans. That said, when we asked them, how are your own needs being met, 80-plus percent say their own needs were being met pretty well. So what accounts for that difference? Well, I think to some degree, people are doing okay, but when they sort of look out there, they're concerned for their comrades. And I think it also speaks to the role that non-governmental organizations are playing here, charities, faith-based organizations, other community groups. You got a lot of other actors stepping into this space wanting to help our veteran population. It's not just the government. And so when you take it all together, veterans say, you know, we're getting some pretty good services there.
We just listed a lot of negatives: emotional, mental health concerns, physical problems,
yep,
difficulty transitioning, getting jobs. You also asked veterans if you had it to do over again, would you do it? And do you regret this? What did you find? What did they tell you?
So the answer here, before I tell it to you, is something that I think most civilian listeners are going to find really surprising. And when I shared the answer before publication to friends who are in the military, they said, yeah, we pretty much guessed that. So knowing everything they know now about the risks, about the sacrifice, about the separation from family, about the privations of being at war, 89% say they'd do it all over again.
89% said they'd do it over again.
Yep.
So what did they say? How did they talk about the war? What were the positives that made them say that?
So among the reasons, you have almost the same percentage saying they feel proud about something they did at war. Sometimes they feel proud about a lot of what they did. In some cases, they feel proud about a few things they did, but there's a lot of pride there. They looked at the work they did positively. In fact, many of them say they miss being at war. It's not that they miss being away from home. It's not that they loved the nations of Iraq or Afghanistan, but they missed the camaraderie. They missed being there with their fellow soldiers, sailors, Marines or airmen. They missed simply kind of serving next to their buddies, people talk a lot about how, you know, when folks are at war, they're not fighting for broader national policy. They're fighting for the person to the left and the right of them in the foxhole.
So do we learn anything from all this, what we're learning from our veterans about how to prepare for future wars, how to deal with the needs of veterans today?
I think there are many takeaways, but one of the biggest is that when you go to war and you send an all-volunteer force, which means you're putting a burden on a small group of Americans, a pretty heavy burden. You're sending people for multiple tours. I mean, we found that, 20-plus percent were on more than two tours in Iraq. You're putting this huge burden on them. It's going to come with a real cost, and a cost of providing medical care and treatment, cost of providing services to help adjust them to the civilian world. And so what you see here is in real stark relief, the real decades-long cost of these two wars. According to the Veterans Administration, 37% of our veterans have been awarded some degree of service-related disability, which they will get lifetime payments connected to these two wars. It's an enormous cost. I'm not trying to suggest it's not due. I mean, these individuals have served heroically, and they deserve it. But when you think about going to war, you have to think about what is the cost of the after war.
Rajiv, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for devoting time to this issue.
We've been speaking with Rajiv Chandrasekaran. He's senior correspondent and associate editor and former Baghdad bureau chief for The Washington Post.